Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
It's totally what I was expecting you to do, to take you deeper with your parenting.
Today is November the 7th, 2014. Our topic for today is going to be kids shaken, not stirred. That's right, today, even though that sounded nothing like 007, we're going to talk a little bit today about the topic of alcohol and children. What do you do? What should you do with your children? Now, you guys mostly know that Jeff and I are believers in the God of the Christian Bible. We want you to hear you say what you're going to hear come from us today is not necessarily based directly upon our religious beliefs either. Jeff takes a more how it affects the body and the interactions that it can have, interrelationally in your family and those kinds of things. I'm going to take a different approach. You're going to get to hear a pretty unique perspective, but fundamentally, we're not going to come out here to tell you what you should believe for your family. We're going to tell you what we believe, but going to teach you how to establish good, healthy rules so that your kids know about alcohol and walk into college well-seasoned, hopefully not, meaning they've gotten schnoz-faced before they got to college, but they're going to know all about what they need to know. Before we get into that, let's get some quick housekeeping out of the way. If you guys want to get notified of any of the new episodes that come out here at the Real Family Guys podcast, simple, easy ways to do that. You can go to the Family Podcast. That is the sister station of the Real Family Guys podcast. Over on the right-hand side, put your name and your email address on that. That puts you on Jeff and I's exclusive mailing list. And what that means is that every time we knock out a new show, you'll get to know, hey, what was the show about today? What did we talk about? Oh, we talked about alcohol. I want to hear about how Jeff lets all his kids get schnoz-faced all the time and stuff like that, right? You'll be the friend. He doesn't really. But that would be the way that you would get to find out about that. Guys, don't forget that is also the mailing list for the Family Podcast Network. If this is your first show that you've ever listening to, you'll also hear the Family Podcast as well that you'll be getting into those emails. So other ways you can do that, you can also give us a call, 661-PARENT. Parent Zero. That's right. Pick up your phone. Call us. 661-PARENT-0. You can do that at any time of the day. You just grab your phone. We set that up to where it goes straight to a voicemail. You hear it answer. Hey, you've reached the Family Podcast Network is what it say, but that's also the Real Family Guys podcast. Leave your questions. Hey, Jeff, we all wanted to know about this, or I read this the other day, or my kid's doing that, and what do y'all think about this? We love answering those questions or the memes or the stuff that y'all read out there. Let's have you guys shoot those over to us. Let's say you don't have your phone out, you're sitting at your computer on your iPad or iPhone. Hey, no problem. Just click on the Contact Us page at thefamilypodcast.com. Whenever you do that, it'll take you to a page that, as long as you got a microphone connected to that device, you can record a voicemail directly over your iPad, iPhone, Android, whatever you got. Leave us a message. We want to answer your question. You can also email if you got an article that you want Jeff and Trey to cover. Just shoot it over to us at TreyGibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com or send it to Jeff at texasfamilyinstitute.org.
So many good ways to get in touch with us, Trey.
We like to stay in contact with you guys because we want to talk about what y'all want to talk about. With all of that out of the way, Jeffrey, what are we talking about today?
We are going to be focusing on something that was actually on my radar last week. For those of you who don't know, aside from a fantastic podcast and a wonderful private practice, I also have a day job that I do. I work at a place in Abilene, Texas that is called Serenity House. It's a alcohol and drug detox and rehab center, and I work in the prevention program. And so a lot of what we do is we go out into the community. We provide several different curricula where we teach protective factors that help kids be resilient against falling into substance use and abuse, right? Basically, we go beyond the days back in the 80s and 90s of just say no and here's your brain on drugs. And we actually go back to some research on what they call risk and protective factors. And so that's something that I do during the day. And last week, around the country, we celebrated something called Red Ribbon Week, which is a week that's been designated just to kind of raise awareness about the dangers of drug and alcohol and tobacco use. And so we did a lot of presentations about that. And I was thinking, how would I do this as a parent? I mean, I go into the schools and the prevention specialists that work with me and we teach stuff in schools, but what does this look like as a parent? How can we talk to our kids in ways that that help them to get, shaken up so that they know what to do and have some skills, but not stirred into this passion for drinking? You see what I did there?
Oh, hey, hey, stir. There we go. Just as a quick aside here, too, I do want y'all to hear us say, in case this is coming off as like it's going to be strictly a show about how you shouldn't have alcohol in your house or all tobacco is bad, I do want y'all to hear at the start that the Homestead de Gibson does keep alcohol. We have beer, liquors, and we do – I'm a pipe – I love to smoke my grandfather's heritage pipes. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But if you're getting to that point where you're like, this is just going to be one of those don't smoke and don't drink and – hang on tight with this because we're gonna have some perspectives I think you guys will really enjoy.
Well, and conversely, even though in our household we don't have any tobacco and to the best of my knowledge we don't have any alcohol, I'm at the same time I'm not.
We hope.
You never know. There might be something hanging out here. No, occasionally we'll have a bottle of Bailey's or something in the fridge because we like to drink our coffee and stuff. Good stuff. So I'm not a teetotaler. I'm not against the use of alcohol completely. And by the same token, although I understand that tobacco does have an addictive component, you know, if that's a person's choice, it's legal and they're welcome to do it. So it's not one of those things where I'm going to point my finger at you and judge you if you're using it.
Honestly, yeah, he will. No, he will.
The choices.
He won't. I'm just kidding.
that we've made in our house are mainly for health reasons than anything else. And for us, it's that's just where we're at. So yeah, we're hopefully we'll have a variety of different perspectives here. And the takeaway, and I really hope that we work well to get us there. At the end of this podcast, I really hope that that what you'll gain from this is feeling like you have the skills to be able to. To be able to figure out what your values are for your family and then how to convey those to your teens in a way that you can connect with them relationally and then help them to be as healthy as they can, not only in their teen years, but also throughout their lives. So having said that, I did a little bit of search around on the interwebs and I ran across the several different things that that we could use. But the one that really jumped out at me as having the best way of kind of getting at it is one that that we've referenced several other times. It's a wonderful parenting resource. And if you hadn't found out about it already, we'd love to invite you to spend some time at www.ahaparenting. That's A-H-A parenting, all one word, ahaparenting.com. And that's where our article comes from today.
Yeah, Dr. Laura is somebody that if you just need somebody just to go grab and just run through articles because they're going to have good stuff that is foundationally sound, do that. Dr. Laura and Teacher Tom are the two places that I say just go in there and just roll the roulette table and just pick an article and it'll be good. She's good. We love Dr. Laura.
So today's article is no exception. It's entitled 13 Things You Should Know When You Talk to Your Child About Alcohol. And for the most part, I think our views, not only personally, but also for the Real Family Guys podcast, line up pretty well on here. But it actually was prompted by a reader who sent in a question to Dr. Laura, and then this is her response to it. And the question was from a reader named Dan. So what he writes as far as his question is, he says, this summer, a teen in my community died in a car accident after a drinking party. Can you give tips on how to talk to my kids about alcohol? They're 7 and 11. Well, she starts off by praising Dan, and I would do the same. I think he's a smart dad because he realizes that that whether we believe it or not, parents are still the most important influence on our kids' behavior, and especially when it comes to drinking alcohol. The earlier that we start talking to our kids about their behavior and about anything in general, the better, right? So she says that her first tip here is that you need to start early. Whenever you have an opportunity, whether it's something tragic like an accident, or if there's a news article, or find those opportunities to be able to go ahead and give them insights, and just whenever it's relevant, don't be afraid to talk to your kids about it.
You know, we've always had beers and stuff like that around the house, and we love to make our own Kahlua and things like that, and so we've always kept it around the house. And as young as the kids will ask about it, we'll tell them straight up, Dad, what is that? I say, well, that's beer, baby. And frequently they'll ask things like, can I have a drink? And there's certain ages that even in our household, we're very much, let them try it. I mean, let them have a sip of it. The reason being is that because to most, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old kids, beer is nasty.
Right.
So they take a sip of it. So we kind of want them to have that experience when they're young because, and we've done that with every single one of our kids they ask for the sip when they're little and we let them have it. Oh, blah. So then it becomes hey, you want a sip of beer? No, God, no, and that's kind of what we're looking for at the young age. Now, we've had to be careful with that, because then along comes little Cora Eve Gibson, and she goes, "Dad, can I have a sip of that?" "Yeah, here you go, babe." She takes a big old sip, and she goes, "Oh, Dad, I love that." And I were like, And so then, like, later, we'd be like, "Oh, you want a sip of this, baby?" "Yeah, Dad." And she takes, and she just starts swigging, like, "God dang, kid, give that back." You know? So you have to be careful with that, but we're big about that as well. And so, you know, if they ask, like, so with Cora, she's like, "Dad, can I have a sip?" And I'm saying, "I'm sorry, baby, we can't. I mean, you can have a little bit, but you can't have a whole lot." And she'll say, "Why?" And so we use that as an opportunity to talk about how. What does alcohol do to the blood system? What does it do when it hits the brain? How does it, you know, what kind of effects does it have? We also talk about size with them. And so we may talk, you know, with smaller bodies, y'all don't synthesize as quick. And so a smaller amount has the same effect of what it can have with a very large, overweight person like your dad. You know what I'm saying? And we really talk to them about that. Do they understand? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And do they understand what we're telling them sometimes at the young age? Not necessarily, but we wanted to remove the taboo of alcohol for them and then use that as kind of a launch pad to teach them about some of the dangerous stuff. You know, a lot of the listeners that we have that come from the Family Podcast Network are very similar to us, and they're shooters. It's a lot like firearms, right? I mean, there's just some things you'll let them do and some things you won't. But the idea behind it is you want to take the taboo out of them so you can teach them and train them, teach them what's safe, same kind of mentality.
Well, and you definitely don't want to create the mystique about it
that
makes it appealing just because it's outlawed, you know. When you take the mysterious part out of it and just give them a factual answer, you know, this is how we have things set up, and you don't get emotional about it or try to be sneaky or subversive about it, then our kids tend to respect that a little bit more because they feel like we're not trying to hide anything from them.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, talking to our kids about alcohol and being open about it and being honest about it is obviously the bedrock for not just talking about alcohol, but talking about anything. The second tip that she lists here is very, very related to the first one. You know, the first one is start talking about alcohol early. The second one is answer their questions.
Yes.
Right? And we all know that our kids can come up with some doozies. I mean, and you know, their curious brains are working 24/7, and they come up with all sorts of stuff. So naturally, they're going to be curious about this. And if we dodge the questions, it's going to come across as that we are trying to hide something. And once again, there's that kind of mystique about it. So just straightforwardly answering the questions. Now, how you answer the questions might sound a little bit different. So here's some suggestions that she has as she outlines this answer. A possible question that a kid might ask is, "But why are grownups allowed to drink?" Right? You know, they can have accidents too. It's not just teenagers, right? So that sounds like a typical question a kid might ask. And I don't know. The answer that she gives here in the article, she says, "Well, you're right, sweetie. No one should drink and drive. And some grownups can't handle alcohol, so they choose not to drink it," right? So I think that that's an acceptable answer, and that sounds like something that I would say in my household as well, that the drinking and driving is a bad combination. There's no wiggle for me on that.
Us either.
Gonna have alcohol in your system, you shouldn't operate heavy machinery at all.
Yeah,
so,
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yep, totally agree.
And it's true that some grownups can't handle alcohol at all, which is why there's some people that they know themselves, they tried it before, and so they choose not to drink.
Yeah.
But I think it's also true that and this is where I might adapt it a little bit, is that some grownups feel, you know, that they can handle a little bit of alcohol, but once you have alcohol in your system, it affects how you decide things. And so, you know, for me anyhow, the times that I choose to have alcohol don't involve drinking at all. It's usually in my own home, or, you know, if I'm on a trip, it's in the hotel that we're staying at. So it doesn't involve getting behind the wheel of a car, period.
Yep. Yeah, no, I'll agree with you on that too. We take the same stance, heavy machinery. We'll throw in firearms, et cetera, in with that as well. I mean, that's a very, very big thing for us. The only thing that I amend on this too is they talked about there's adults that can't handle alcohol. I will say that I think that there are some young folk that can handle alcohol as well, even though the law says don't until a certain age and whatnot. And I think a lot of the problems that you see with youth having problems with alcohol often comes in a large part because of the lack of training in it. Because it's just a nope, you can't touch it until you're a certain age. We don't teach the vernacular and the language and the ideas and the thoughts and the processes. And so they walk into it with nothing. They wind up just going ahead and getting it anyway. They sneak it, if you will. And because of that, they have zero training in it. And so, see, I mean, that's the same process. I mean, we keep coming back to firearms, but, I mean, I'm trying to pull something that can be equally as dangerous and equally as safe and fun whenever it's done appropriately. And it's kind of like you don't ever teach your kids how to shoot, and you tell them they can't do it until they're a certain age, and you keep pushing it, and finally one day they decide to grab your pistol when you're not looking, or they get it out of the gun safe or whatever, and they don't have any training. And how dangerous is that? To me, I see a lot of the problems with it being is this. Now, don't hear me say, don't go and say, oh, listen, I listen to this one guy, Trey, who says that you should let your kids have alcohol. Absolutely not.
Alcohol and firearms.
That's right. I have kids that I would trust more than other of my kids in my own home. And so what I'm saying is just, you know, the mentality we take is just watch your kids and know your kids and know what they can take. I mean, we don't ever let our kids get, you know, like schnoz faced. We won't ever do that. That's just something that is outside of the fact of what it does to you physiologically, what it does to you mentally. We don't agree with that piece of it. But outside of that, we especially don't want kids doing that, and especially not on our watch. You know, there'll come a day if that's a choice they want to make, that's fine. Especially if they can practice that safely, that's their choice then. But until then, That's a thing that we practice, and we hope that they'll engender as their own, you know, their own value system.
Well, but the point of this particular suggestion is that you need to be able to
be
answer
straight
questions.
With them. Yeah,
right. Be straight with them, and you know, it's okay when answering questions, they might come up with a question that you don't have an immediate answer to, and just like with any other topic, it's best not to try and make something up or to posture, and it's okay to admit, you know what, I'm going to have to look that up, and I'll get back to you on that. Or yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to have to think about that, and then we can talk about it some more. I think our kids appreciate when we can honestly let them know that that, you know, sometimes there's stuff that we haven't thought through, right? And I think that it's possible that our kids are going to come up with a question about alcohol, even if it's question that comes up that's just infinitely regressive. You know, well, why? And then you give an answer. Well, well, why? And then you give an answer. And okay, but why? You know, and they just kind of keep, you know, hunting things back. You're like, well, because.
Because I'm going to punch you in the face if you say it again.
That's right.
I don't ever say that.
Now, the third point that she makes here actually kind of gets into a little bit of the way that I think that we come from it in our household, or at least how I would explain things. Her third suggestion here, after answering the questions and start talking early, she says that you need to set clear expectations, right? And this is, Trey, you were kind of getting at this a little bit as far as the expectations in Casa de Gibson. But she gives several age level responses here. She says for a 7-year-old, you know, when is it okay to drink alcohol? And then her response is, well, when you're a grown up, right? Mm. And for an 11-year-old, to set the expectation, talk to him on the level of, you know, as a parent, it's my job to help you stay healthy. And a lot of kids around you will try alcohol and they're going to be curious about it. You can always tell me and ask me anything you want, and we can brainstorm what you can say to your friends, but I don't want you drinking because it's bad for you in so many ways, right? Okay. Yeah. I can see that developmentally for an 11-year-old to let them know that it's about healthy choices and to acknowledge that they're right, that age 11 and 12 statistically is when a lot of people are first exposed to alcohol, whether it's something in a healthy way, they notice that their parents are drinking it, or whether they try it for themselves the first time. Research just shows, or at least in the prevention world, a lot of the research that we come across of people that end up in substance use, it starts at about that age, right? And then 15-year-olds is the next suggestion she gives. How would you set an expectation for a 15-year-old? You can say, when you're a grown-up, whether you drink is up to you. But right now, it's up to me to help you protect yourself. Drinking alcohol is against the law, one. And two, it's dangerous for you, right? Mm. And so what she's alluding to as far as the dangerous is really the angle that I take on this is that alcohol affects you physiologically in a lot of different ways. And I think the most impactful way that I've seen from the research that I've done is how it affects brain development. And not in small doses, not a sip here or there. But when it's consumed in large quantities by somebody whose brain is still developing, our kids, it makes changes in how our brain is able to develop healthily. And so for me, that's a big reason that we have for telling kids that they don't need to be drinking alcohol until their brain is at the end of its developmental stages, which is why the upper or the lower limits of legal drinking age is around 17 and 18 years old. And for me, that's probably the biggest reason. You know, Trey, you were saying earlier that drawing the analogy between firearms and teaching them how and giving them the exposure to it. So, I mean, it's not a bad analogy as far as analogies go, because there are just some definite parallels. But where I think that there's a hiccup there is that you can make clear decisions about firearms, even if you get excited and have adrenaline flowing. But alcohol contains the possibility for addiction, and the addictive properties in alcohol and how it affects our brain, for me, factor into how I talk to my kids about how they choose to use it. And so, you know, all these expectations that that Dr. Markham is talking about here, as far as at appropriate age levels for a 7-year-old, for an 11-year-old, for a 15-year-old, how I would also talk to my kids about it would be to let them know how it's going to affect their body and their development and how they grow.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that, and I do agree that it doesn't have a direct response. I need to take you shooting a little bit, and it will alter your brain chemistry some, and it does have an addictive property to it.
Sure.
But no, I'm being facetious here, but I hear what you're saying. I agree.
Yeah. Well, and that actually kind of dovetails. I don't want to rush through number three if you had some other stuff you want to say about it, but number four kind of gets into what the reasons and the facts behind things, and this is where you know, number four says, give your kids facts before you think they need them, right?
Well, I tell you what, let me go back to number three, because I forgot.
Okay,
I did have two things on that. For me, I actually disagree with her a little bit in how she sets this. But the mentality that Dr. Markham is setting here is that kids should wait until they're full-grown adults. And by that, I'm going to have to assume that she means wait until you're a legal adult. So I think that she's approaching this from how do we justify to our children to wait until they are lawfully legal to consume, or to, let me rephrase that, to purchase alcohol on their own. I think that's a fine value. It was actually a value at one time we used to believe in as well. We've modified it since then. What's the word I'm looking for here? Our cornerstone in what we believe in this, it kind of sets all the other ones, is what we look for is first off an understanding and a knowledge of what you're doing. An understanding of what alcohol is, how it affects you, how what it does to the brain, and to the body, and to the senses. And so that's a big piece of what we want, is do they really understand that? Anna's at an age now where she gets it. I mean, she really understands how it affects the body, and that, so that's the knowledge we look for. But we don't, that's not enough. We also couple that with, we have to see elements in their lives where they're where they're expressing self-discipline. For instance, we wait for till we start seeing them being able to self-discipline themselves with video games. Don't get me wrong. Up until that point, we'll be that for them, because we want to teach and model that with them and help them grow into those things. But we begin to look for things like a good example of what we've started to see in Anna is that, like, at nighttime, we let them watch movies to get tired and to wind down. And then they know at a certain time you shut the TV off. And so we've started to see that in Anna now, to where she'll have the TV shut off right at her bedtime. And we come in to check on her, and she's already got it off and she's already bed down. Or the other day she came in and we had – my wife made this vanilla – or this banana pudding – or banana cream pudding, Jeff. And I mean, I salivated the thought of it. But she made a whole bunch of this. And Anna went and had some, and she portioned out how much she wanted, and she looked at it, and finally she was like, you know, I really don't want that. So she's starting to get to the point where we're going to be a lot more open to if she's interested. I don't think she is, because we gave her access to beer at a younger age and she hated it. And so now she associates alcohol with taste nasty. But all of that to say is that we are more concerned, do we have a knowledge about what it is and what it does to us, plus the ability to discipline ourselves with things that we do like, and understanding how things affect us. We're more concerned about those two items than we're concerned about whether or not we're the right age for something. Because the reality is there's young people that I would trust with alcohol. There's people that are over the legal drinking age I don't trust. I would never trust. There's so many people I would even say that even being legally able to drink, I don't think they should ever have it in their home again. And so for us, we don't hinge that on an age. It is not illegal, at least not in Texas, to allow your children to drink in your home with your consent and permission. Now, check with your local laws on that. In Texas, it is not. Now, you can't let your child get intoxicated because that could be...
Right, there's limits to that.
That's right. That could be chalked up to a negligence, and so that could be Child Protective Services. That's negligence. That's a different ballgame. But letting your kids enjoy alcohol, having a glass of wine with you at dinner is not illegal in most states that I know of. Again, check with your local laws first. Don't trust this, what I'm saying. But all that to say, frankly... Jeff, I mean, even for me, I'm more concerned about things like sugar and cholesterol in our kids' diets than I'm worried about alcohol and them having access to that. I mean, the wanton and even expected use of sugar all the way down to our most recent little holiday that we just had, Halloween, I'm way more worried about the effects that sugar has on the body than I am alcohol.
Well, let's kind of progress here because I think number four kind of gets to that as far as what facts kids need before they use. And that's what her point number four is, to give your kid facts before you think they need them. And so she lists a couple of things here, and this is, you know, obviously not exhaustive as far as the things she's listing here. But let's just kind of go through them, and then I'll circle back to what you were mentioning here just a minute ago. She poses the question that a kid might ask. You know, they might say something like, "Well, a lot of kids drink. Why do I have to wait until I'm grown up?" You know, kind of that whole, you know, everyone else is doing it. Why can't I? Kind of argument that you hear a lot of kids say, right? And so here's some facts that she lists here, and she's not citing any of this stuff. So I think these are things that that she assumes are common knowledge. The first one she lists is, because your brain is still developing, is one reason why you should wait till you're grown up. So using alcohol, she stresses here, actually changes the way your brain works and makes it less smart and less happy for the rest of your life. Now, you know, depending on the research that you cite, you know, you may debate exactly how she's emphasizing things here, but alcohol is a depressant and it does change the way that your brain works while it's in your system. As far as making it less smart and less happy, well, it does slow things down, so it makes it more difficult to access that frontal cortex and making decisions. As far as less happy, I don't know exactly where that's coming from.
Yeah.
Okay, I know plenty of people that are very happy when they've got a lot of alcohol.
Maybe too happy.
But yeah, maybe a little bit too happy, right? But I think what she's pointing out is you know, there are some ways that drugs affect the brain, that because it stimulates the dopamine pathways that we begin to rely on substances in order to get that happiness factor. And so
the consequences of excessive use of it leads to less happiness. Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that may be what she's getting at there. But at any rate, I think that's it's stuff like this that it's worthwhile to talk to your kids about.
Oh, I love this. Now you're going to cover the next bullet point.
Yeah,
I love going through this one.
All right. So here's where we get some statistics stuff in here. And statistics are great for making points without having to to really have good arguments. You know, that's what statistics are for, because you can make statistics say anything. But she lists one here. She says kids who try alcohol before age 15 are 4 times more likely to develop alcoholism than those who begin after age 20. All right. So once again, she's not citing anything here, so I can't go to any report and look at and validate how she's doing things. However, I can tell you that there are a lot of statistics out there that talk about the correlated effects of alcohol use at a young age and alcoholism at later ages. And so I believe that there's some truth to this, although I don't know the exact numbers, that the earlier kids start using alcohol, the more likely they are to develop alcoholism later in life.
You know, a lot of people are thinking, may think that I'm going to actually disagree with this. I actually won't. I think this is actually very true. I do think that kids that start drinking alcohol at a younger age than 15 are more likely to experience that. However, my first question would be on this is, well, what was our demographic?
Else?
What was, you know, what was our sample here? And a sample in statistics is referring to the people that we draw. And a diversified sample is what you want. You want to kind of get this idea, what do human species experience? Well, the next question that I would have is well, out of these, you know, these kids under 15 that are 4 times more likely, how many of them came from a broken home or from a dad who was missing?
What other factors are
going on? You know, maybe there was poor relationship, and so we never talked about alcohol. So there was the mystique. Great word, Jeff. There was the mystique of alcohol. I mean, what other confounding factors increased and made it 4 times more likely, other than just the sampling alcohol before the age of 15? It would make me wonder. And it might be that the minute that alcohol touches your lip at those young ages, it really does something to you that makes you more likely. It could be. I'm not saying that is an impossibility. I just would be interested to see some of the other stuff. But That's statistics for you right there.
And once again, this is stuff that engenders good conversation between you and your kids. So, you know, it's good to throw this stuff out there and be able to dialogue about it, right? I like her next little blurb here. She says, being a teenager is hard, and making good choices requires all your best thinking. Teens can't think as well when they drink, so you're more likely to do things that you'll be sorry about later. I would agree with this one in principle, that that alcohol on a teenage brain, a teenage brain that already is not fully developed and already is not does not have full access to that frontal cortex and decision making, consequential thinking. Being a teenager is hard, and despite young exposure to it, when you're at a party and it's less likely to be sipping alcohol and tasting it, and more likely to be downing it and drowning in it, that's a situation I'd rather my kids avoid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, I talk very flippantly about, flippant's not the word. We put a ton of research and time and thought into this, but you know, I talk very nonchalantly about the idea of kids, you know, experiencing alcohol within our homes. One of the things that I do not have a sense of humor about is them going to parties and experiencing that outside of the home.
Your influence, yeah, absolutely.
Of my influence, that ability to teach, to talk, to process, to keep safe in some cases, to literally actually physically keep safe. In those cases, when it leaves that capacity, I don't have no sense of humor about that. Parents that will pick up alcohol for little, you know, for teen parties and stuff like that,
which is illegal.
That is illegal, and I have an express problem with that. That is a big time no-no, and so that I just want to make sure that there's a very clear, stark line. My hope is that by giving my kids enough exposure to it in a safe, controlled environment, as safe as controlled as we can ever experience. It, giving them that, it takes the taboo out of it. And so when they're like, man, we're going to go get wasted, we're going to drink some beers, we're like, yeah, whatever, I had that crap, it's nasty anyway, or, you know, or whatever goes through their head, you know. I mean, I have access to that at home if that was a big deal to me. That's right. The hope is you take the mystique out of it, and all of a sudden it's just, there's no, I mean, it's not worth getting into.
So one of the things she doesn't list here, Trey, that I wanted to circle back and talk to when it comes to, you were saying earlier that that there are some young people that you would trust just because they've got good self control and they've got reason thinking, and they're less likely to do something extreme with it. So you would feel more trusting of a kid who's responsible in that way to be able to try some alcohol versus adults who, you know, they're fully past the legal age, but they can't handle it. And so one of the facts that she doesn't list here that I wanted to kind of combine with that idea is something that we've seen in our family. And this is something else that we talk about, is that alcohol doesn't just affect your brain, and it doesn't just affect your body, and it doesn't just affect your behavior. It also affects your relationships, especially when it's something that's misused or abused. And because it's possible to use it to a degree and then have it be misused beyond that degree, we've seen that affect our family personally. You know, we've got folks in our family that have problems with alcohol, and to the point that they've gone to jail, or they have, when they are inebriated, they have made poor decisions, and they've engaged in domestic abuse or even sexual abuse in our family history, not our immediate family, but it's stuff that we know about and we've experienced as a family that's happened to us. And we've had to ask, well, what about this relative? What about that relative? And so that's, I think it's something that is obviously outside the norm. I wouldn't say at all that alcohol makes people do those bad things. There's still people and they choose those things. But that's certainly something I'd want to talk to as far as facts about how alcohol affects us, that it's not just a brain thing. It's not just it affects your body thing. It's not just it affects your behaviors, but it can also seriously affect your relationships, especially if it turns into something that becomes an emotional crutch or a habit, because then it's going to affect your relationships as well.
Yeah, I you worded that perfect. For a split second, I thought for a second you weren't going to say it could, and you nailed it. So I complete endorsement. Trey endorsed.
So, I almost kind of think that as we move through these points, she's almost being redundant on purpose, because number five is keep communication open, and I'm like, yeah. Isn't that what we've been doing? But
yeah,
the point
that's
that
like
she makes
two.
Here, and the little twist here is that she says kids often test you to see if you overreact.
Yeah.
And so I think a better way to word this one, instead of keeping communication open, is watch your response, right? Make sure that you're not sensationalizing things when your kid reports to you something they've heard, you know, maybe at school, you know, so-and-so, you know, brought, you know, a fifth of vodka to school today, or, you know, somebody snuck some vodka in a Starbucks cup today, right? Instead of blowing up and being, oh my goodness, that's horrible. I hope that kid got drunk, you know, instead of responding, extremely, you can do a better job with your kids. Instead of shutting down that conversation, you want to get them talking and thinking about, wow, you know, how could you tell that he was drinking? Was his behavior different? Could you smell it? What did the other kids do? Did the other kids try it? And kind of drawing out, helping them to think critically about how that behavior affected that kid and how it affected the people around them. You know, well, do you think that was a smart thing to do? You know, would you ever do something like that? How did the kids around him handle that incident? Did he get in trouble? I mean, what are the consequences? You know, being able to help them think critically means that you're coaching them that when they come across that decision later in life, that they're less likely to respond in a knee-jerk fashion and more likely to respond out of something that they have thought carefully about, and they're making their own intelligent choices.
You know, a lot of times with kids, trying to get your kids to think, it's kind of like your kids when they run into an issue or a problem, like take the Starbucks cups, you know, situation here with alcohol in it. And did you talk about that? Yeah, you prefaced that, didn't you?
Yeah, I mentioned
it. And it's kind of like your kids hop in. It's like they're going to go whitewater rafting, but they're at the start of it. And it's like they hop in their little kayaks, but they don't know what to do next. And so a lot of times getting your kid to think is, you know, it involves asking just those little simple questions. And every time you ask a question, it encourages them to put their paddle in the water and stroke. And then, you know, each one of those questions, so what do the other kids do? Did they try it? How did they act? What did you think about that? Did you want to try it? Why or why not? Right, each one of those questions just kind of gets them thinking. And you would be amazed, especially if you spent your time really instructing your kids in values. Take care of your body. Be smart. Don't put yourself in situations that you would regret later. When you teach your kids these things, that's kind of the crux that helps them come to these, you know, conclusions we want them to come to themselves. If we try to impart that, you shouldn't drink alcohol because it's bad and it could have been dangerous and it could have gotten you kicked out of the school, and you go filling them all that stuff up, sometimes they'll hear it. Maybe they'll even do it out of fear of you, but a lot of times it's not really settling in. It's not becoming an intrinsic, a personal value system for them. And what we want them to do is we want them to value these things themselves. Not just, oh my God, I would be so afraid of getting, you know, of mom and dad being angry with me, right? We want it to be, well, no, I don't want to do that, because if a teacher busts me in the middle of that stuff, you know, taking a snort, right? I mean, this could be some serious mess. I mean, you can get kicked out of school for stuff like this, especially with this no tolerance stuff that's really flaring up in public schools nowadays. I mean, this could be a big deal, and we want our kids to come to that those solutions. And so, when Dr. Laura talks about this open communication, what she's not talking about is talking to them. It's about getting them talking. And asking those facilitating questions and letting them be honest. Did you want to try it? Well, yeah, I kind of did. What I would do is I'd go get a flippin' Starbucks cup and hook them up with some of mine and say, here, just do it at home. Try this at home. Don't do it at school. I'll give this to you here and you won't get in big trouble for this.
Well, and that's actually probably a pretty healthy way to help your child to be able to think critically about the choices they're making. And it does it in an environment that they're less likely to do something extreme and hurt themselves. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Which kind of really is a great kind of lead into to point number six that she has here, which is coach your kids instead of trying to control them. Right. And she points out something we've said again and again and again on the Real Point of the Guys podcast. You cannot actually control your child when they're out of your sight. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
But what you can do is you can help them become a good person who has good values and good judgment. But you do that by modeling. Right.
Yeah.
And so while you've got them under your influence, what are some ways that you could coach them to, once again, have good judgment, good values, especially when it comes to talking about alcohol? If you are practicing the other principles that she's already mentioned here, to talk about them whenever it's relevant, when it comes up in the news, when it's a local story about alcohol use or about an accident that may have been alcohol related or something like that, or if something happens at school and you're able to engage your kids about it, that's a great time to practice the coaching thing rather than trying to tell them what they should or shouldn't do, right? Just help them to learn to think critically by asking them leading questions. You know, why do you think it's illegal for kids and teens to drink alcohol, right? What would you do if you were in the car and the driver had been drinking? Would you just ride with them? Would you get out of the car? I mean, and brainstorm and you know, kind of practice with them, right? What about if the driver was a grown-up, right? What if it wasn't a teenager? What if it was a grown-up who had drunk too much, right? Have you ever seen an adult who drank too much? What did you think of them? You know, did they act differently? Did they behave differently or think differently? Do you know of any kids who've tried alcohol or drugs? Do you think it's a problem for kids at your school? I mean, these are all great questions that can elicit really, really handy conversations and can help your kids to see you as somebody who's not going to judge, but rather who's going to empower and believe that they can make good choices.
You know, remember, your kids more than likely are not going to be disposed to making the right choice without any kind of coaching. We want to believe that we raise our kids to be smart, but the reality is if we haven't ever stopped to ask ourselves, what would you do if you were in the car and your friend had been drinking and you could tell? If we've never stopped to think about what we would do, if never trained our mind to know what the steps are, we have a tendency in those moments to not take the steps that we would want to take. It's just kind of the way human disposition seems to work. You know, there was actually a really good commercial about this years ago, Jeff. And I remember that you see this young man walking down the road, and he's walking, and they're talking about talking to your kids about drugs and all that stuff. And he sees this one lady coming out of the grocery store, and she's just dropping all her groceries, and she's having a hard time juggling. All of a sudden, his dad appears behind him and kind of whacks him on the back of the head. Son, you know better than that. Get over there and help that lady, you know, get her groceries to the car. He runs over there and helps her groceries. He's walking down the road a little further, and he sees this old lady, you know, getting out of her car, and she's trying to go to put a quarter in the meter. And she can't find a quarter. All of a sudden, Dad comes out of, you know, in the back of his mind, pops in, and you see he appears behind him, and he thumps him in his ear, and he says, "Son, you know better than that. You got a spare quarter you don't need. You go help that lady." And he does that. And it's a series of these things where his dad, you know, his dad's voice comes in his head.
His dad's in his head. Yeah.
That's right. And he finally walks down in the subway, and he walks up to his friends, and they're all sitting around. They're like, "Man, you want to smoke this?" And they hand him a joint, a doobie, and he puts it in his hand, and he stops, and he looks over his shoulder, and his dad doesn't appear. And he goes down and he just takes a big draw, a big old puff out of this thing. And then it says, talk to your kids about this, right? And it's that mentality that if our voices aren't in their heads, then they don't have a file to draw on. They don't have anything to run to say, what do I believe about this? What were my options to choose from? And more often than not, they'll follow what everybody else is doing. And so it is wise to throw these situations at our kids and just get them thinking, what would you do?
Yeah, I'm going to tweak that, Trey, just a little bit because I actually disagree that they aren't going to have a frame of reference. I think what you were trying to get across, the point is that if they don't have your frame of reference, then what frame of reference are they going to use?
Right.
And I will tell you right now that the alcohol and drug and pharma and tobacco industries spend billions of dollars every year trying to influence our societies, particularly our kids, because they do, even though they're not supposed to, they market to our kids. And the references that our kids have to drug use and alcohol use is in the hundreds of references per day. It's the music they listen to. It's the TV they watch. It's the pop culture that they're influenced by and that they're exposed to. It's their social media. It's their Twitter. It's normalized in such a way that if we don't give them an alternate frame of reference, the frame of reference that they will have is not going to benefit them.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. No, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. All right. So part of the coaching process goes from number 6 here, coaching instead of trying to control. Number 7 on her list is what we were kind of already talking about. Have practice conversations with your child. You know, little role plays about various scenarios. And I think we've kind of already covered that, Trey. I love the commercial that you just brought up there, and I don't think I've ever seen it, but I'd love to, because I was like, man, that sounds like it'd be pretty good. But it reminded me of something that you and I have talked about before, and the example that we've used before of being able to have those conversations with your child to the point that at some point down the road, based out of the relationship that you have with your kid, when they're given the opportunity to do something that they shouldn't be doing, somebody gives them a joint or a drink or something like that, and it's not something that they want to partake in right then, that they can either respond with that voice in their head of, you know, dad's going to kill me or dad's going to hurt me, versus, I can't do that to my dad, you know, and that's the that's what I would love for them to be able to do at that point, is to have so many practice conversations with them and to have that opportunity to give them our value system and to help them think critically about things, so that when they get to that point, they're less likely to obey because they're afraid they'll get in trouble, and they're more likely to say, you know, not I can't do that because my dad would kill me, but I can't do that because, man, that would kill my dad, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is, you know, a lot of times we just don't know how to say the things that we want to say. And I think practicing this out with our kids is a good idea. And really, we do this with our kids in multiple scenarios and roles. For instance, like, you know, practice conversations with our kids. We have practice conversations with kids. What's going to happen if somebody reaches over and grabs your genitals? I mean, let me phrase that. I don't like talking about that crap with my kids. I mean, that makes me uncomfortable just right now. But we do that because we want our kids to know what, you know, when is it okay to say no? We teach our kids that even if an adult does that, you can be aggressive. I mean, physically and verbally aggressive with somebody, because we also did a lot of the research to show that perpetrators do not like it whenever their kids. They want submissive kids that are going to be quiet and do what they want. And so, you know, we teach our kids these very things. But having our kids walk through practice conversations in these uncomfortable situations can be some of the best things that we can do, because not only do they know this is the right thing to do, but they also know in advance, I have mom and dad's permission to believe,
That's
say,
right.
and think this way, no matter who it is.
You know, you just covered points 9, 10, and
11.
Oh,
crap. Sorry.
Which is great. And so we'll come back to those when we hit those. But I want to make sure that we don't skip over number 8, because this is kind of what you were talking about earlier. Number 8 says, make sure your teen has other opportunities for extreme fun.
Yes. And yes.
I think that this goes right up there with learning how to shoot and being able to go hunting.
Yes.
And I mean, explosives are exhilarating.
Yes.
Exhilarating,
we
right?
We love boom stuff here.
And so, you know, teens need excitement to test themselves in new situations. And so we need to encourage our kids to be able to do that, but to do it in a safe way, right? Whether they're doing something extreme like skateboarding or rock climbing, or through something where they're taking a risk like public speaking or acting, where that kind of puts them out there out of their comfort zone. But when we give them ways to take risky behaviors in ways that are healthy for them, they're less likely to involve themselves in risky behaviors that are unhealthy for them.
That's right. If you guys haven't ever heard of Tannerite, you need to go look it up. Because that is the one way that you can mix firearm and legal plastic explosives in America into one thing. Tannerite explosive targets. Just go look them up. It's amazing.
You heard it here on the Real Family Guys podcast. There ought to be some sort of endorsement that we can work into this, right?
Disclaimer. That's right. Can we get paid for this, Tannerite, please?
I don't know. Will there be a link in the show notes?
I think I may just. I'm going to put a link to Tannerite in there, and maybe one day Tannerite will trace that back here to the Real Family Guys podcast, and then we'll get royalties.
just out of curiosity, what's something extreme that you'd like to experience with your kids down the road? I mean, some extreme sport or just activity or whatever.
We just talked about it today. This is going to sound crazy, and it's gonna sound like we'd never be able to do it. We want to go into space. Like, we want to go and take a trip like to the International Space Station or something like that, and experience weightlessness and see the Earth from up there. Maybe spend a week up there before we come back or something like that. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just an hour long. Getting to be in space and experience weightlessness, but that's one of the things we want to do. That's crazy, and but I mean I don't know if the kids will stick with it. They said it now because we had our science lesson today in gravity and whatnot, and we watched a picture of the show of the ISS where they did a water bubble. They threw the camera through, you know, the GoPro through the water bubble. Oh, that was so cool. But we got to talk about that, and that's one of our things. But we want to go to space. Space, baby.
Well, that's not
the final frontier.
As you might think, do you realize that in 66 years, we went from learning how to fly to touching foot on the moon?
You know, I saw the, you know, Virgin's first attempt at a commercial space flight and how that turned out. I think I'm going to give that technology a little while to catch up.
You don't want to be an early adopter.
No, I'm not ready for that. But outside of that, I'm interested.
Sure. All right, so that's a fun little rabbit trail that we follow there. But let's get back to what Trey already referenced here, number 9. One of the tips that she has how to talk to your kids about drinking alcohol, is it's helpful to be able to raise a child who can say no, right? And this is something that we've hammered pretty hard here, because I think that we both are – this is part of our core value. When kids are raised to obey authority without question, they learn not to be able to assert themselves. And so when other teens come in and they have any kind of like their swagger or they're acting with authority, our kids will listen to them because, you know, they look like they have authority. So we want kids who know how to say no and who know how to choose to cooperate because it's the right thing to do, because they have their own moral compass, right?
Yeah. Well, this is not just peers either. I just got finished reading a story today about a 46-year-old ex-NFL cheerleader who...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, did you read that freaking story?
I did.
And so she actually invited one of her son's friends over to several little deals. The son admits that the mom became obsessed with him. And eventually, one thing led to another, and to where there was sexual stuff happening, and eventually this boy had to say no. But teaching our kids to say no to adults is a beautiful thing, because
that's right.
The reality is, I mean, there are people that grow that you would never think. I mean, if you take a look at most people that predate on children, on young people, they're the people you would never expect. They gain and earn the trust of the people around them, so that way they are trusted to be around children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how they get access. And so teaching our kids when and where it is okay to say no to an adult and to be hurtful and mean in some cases, physically violent if necessary to stop things, is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So we don't want to raise kids who are blindly obedient, but kids who are cooperative because it's the right thing to do.
That's right.
Because they
kind,
choose
thoughtful, and caring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those frequently get confused. You know, kind, thoughtful, and caring get confused with obedient, but they don't have to be the same thing. It's one of them is an intentional choice to be in a situation. The other one is doing it out of fear of not being that.
All right, moving on to number 10 of the 13 things to know about talking to kids about alcohol. She says, when your child does, and she capitalizes the word does, when your child does try alcohol, be there to talk about it. And I think this kind of goes back to not overreacting, right? Statistically, most kids will try some alcohol before they're 21. It's just, they're exposed to it. They have access to it. And she says your goal is to, I don't necessarily agree with this. She says your goal is to postpone that day as long as possible. Not necessarily, but... you know, because Trey, you were saying that being able to expose them in small ways to doing it under your influence in your home can be a tactic and a strategy for helping them to understand the complexities of it and be able to make good decisions about it when they're younger, right?
Right, right.
But we do want to help them think through it so they can keep themselves safe, right? And so when we find out that our children have tried alcohol, that's when we need to be able to talk to them about it and be able to confirm that no matter how they behave, we still love them. And our goal is just to help them be as honest and open as they can be so that we can be what we need to be, parents who guide them. And so being able to talk about it just all the stuff that we've already talked about, being able to dialogue and not be judgy and be able to help them understand that their safety and their health and their growth, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, is what our concern is as parents.
I mean, I can't argue with this one because the approach that we take, this is a moot point because they've already tried it. I mean, you know,
right.
You know, at the behest of our facilitation, they've already tried it. So I can't argue with this one.
So moving on to number 11, if it's happening outside your influence, she says, be your child's backup. She says, don't let a momentary lapse become a tragedy. And honestly, this goes outside of using alcohol. I think that this is a good thing for us to tell our kids no matter what, when it comes to peer pressure or trying to fit in or some of the other developmental things that they may choose to engage in a risky behavior, whether it's drinking alcohol, trying drugs, smoking, or even, experimenting with sexuality, is letting our kids know that just because they have a momentary lapse, they can always call us to rescue them, right? Because I know that my wife's mother told her growing up, she says, if you ever need to use me for an excuse, ever, period, do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can blame me for anything. Just let me know that you did it, right? And so she says here, Dr. Markham says, never hesitate to call me if you're in trouble or if one of your friends is in trouble. I will be there if you need me no matter what. Right. And she says no punishment. I think there's probably some consequences that may come from that, but that's probably a show for topic for another show about how to handle that.
Well, I'm gonna interpret the way she's defining punishment here, I think is the way I define it personally. Punishment is the addition of extra uncomfortable consequences that aren't necessarily in correlation with what happened. And so a natural consequence of this might be that they get in trouble or it spreads around the school or they lose a scholarship or something like that. bringing them home and then refusing to let them go out for the next three, or, you know, the next 3 months or something like that is additional uncomfortability to what's already there. That I'm guessing that's what she means here. And frankly, I would agree with that, because if a kid's willing to step forward and say, whoa, I made a mistake, got into a bad place here, I really need you to come pick me up, I think in a situation like that, I probably would not incorporate anything extra unless they tried to be sneaky about it and I found out about it that way. That's the only case that I think that I would ever start being like, what do we need to do about this?
Well, in my case, I think there would be hopefully we would have already talked about consequences if that ever happened.
Yeah.
That you know, this is how I'm going to respond. Not because I hate you, not because I'm trying to be mean, but because I love you and this is the limit and the value that we're going to have as a family. So, I want you to call and I want you to be safe. So I'm not going to tack on something extra. But you know, there's consequences for making those choices in our family. Yeah. So. Number 12, she says model healthy living. If you drink heavily, your child is more likely to start drinking earlier and to drink more heavily. Model a responsible relationship with alcohol. Equally important, model handling your own emotions responsibly, which gives kids the foundation they need to manage their own emotions. All right.
That's it.
And the point that she's making here, and this is what I see in the rehab center that we talk about.
This is heavy right here.
Is that people who don't have good emotional management skills tend to rely on substances to avoid feeling.
Self-medication, yeah.
Exactly. It's self-medication.
That's good.
And that's why emotional regulation and those emotional skills, skills are
that
so
is so good point. Good point, Jeff.
Yeah. So we need to model it for our kids. If you're drinking, there's no problem with drinking alcohol, because alcohol in and of itself is not a bad thing.
That's right.
It's how we use alcohol.
That's right.
So.
And it's an easy – the problem is it's an easy one to abuse. I mean, it really is. It is so simple because at certain ages, it's available to you. Right. Frankly, it's available to you when you're younger than these ages. We drank illegally as kids in high school. But it was available to us even then. It is a reality in this life. And the problem is it's so simple. It's a simple medication tool. You know, abusing Vicodin is one thing, and you can get a hold of that, but it's just a lot – harder because it's a controlled substance. And this one, in reality, is not. Once you reach a certain age, you can do whatever you want with it so long as it's not getting behind a wheel, like you said earlier, or something to that effect. But it's an easy one to abuse. And that's why it's something that needs to be starkly understood by your own kids. And that's why I also say that even if my kids, you know, Grant has a good understanding and knowledge of what alcohol is and what it does, I don't see self-discipline in him yet. I don't see him self-controlling very well yet. He still depends on a lot of the rules that we have. I don't see them becoming values yet. And he would not be allowed to be interested as much as Anna would be allowed. She's just not. She's just very disinterested in it. And so we won't let her. Cora, again, like we talked about earlier, I can see her being one that she would love to enjoy it, but I don't see self-discipline in her, and she won't be. Until I start really seeing that self-discipline in her, she won't ever be allowed to have anything more than the sip occasional. So, yeah, that's such a good one. I love this one.
Well, and just as an extension from modeling it yourself and learning how – or modeling – handling your own emotions responsibly. Mm. The number 13 in our last suggestion here is to foster emotional intelligence. Help your children to learn to notice their own moods and to work through their feelings. Help them to find positive ways to deal with stress, because drinking, like we said earlier, is one of those ways that teens self-medicate because they don't have healthier ways to process their feelings.
Yeah, that's good.
And so when they've got those healthier ways, when you've got healthy talking and healthy relationships in your family, they're less likely. Those are all protective factors that mean they're less likely to get involved with substance use or abuse.
That's good.
Well, Trey, I really have enjoyed kind of talking through this with you. And you know, a lot of times before we start a show, we'll kind of talk through. Hey, I'm going to say this. Hey, I'm going to say that. And this one, we both just kind of said, hey, let's go in and just kind of let the chips fall where they may, and just see where we come out on this. But I really enjoyed kind of giving different perspectives here, and I hope that our listeners, like I said, the takeaway is, you know, now's the right time to start talking about my family, with my family about making healthy choices, and especially when it comes to substance uses like drugs and alcohol. This is a good time to start doing it.
One more thing that I wanted to add in this too, we talked real briefly about tobacco, and so I'm going to give you guys a quick rundown. We're not going to go nearly as deep. We won't go even remotely as deep as we went to the alcohol piece of it. What do we do about alcohol here? I'm a pipe a pipe tobacco smoker. I inherited just probably 30 or well, not probably like 20 or 30, but I inherited a bunch of heritage pipes from my grandfather when he passed away. And so I picked up smoking pipe tobacco very infrequently. So I do want to say that in our household, I mean, like, I hate cigarettes. I've tried them in the past. If any of you guys are cigarette smokers, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be hurtful here. I just don't like them. I just can't stand them. But do we smoke? Yes. Do we allow our kids to smoke, you know, on our pipes and stuff like that? The answer is yes, we do let them try it. We've never had a kid that hasn't puffed on it, who hasn't gone, oh, Dad, I want to try that again. And that we, I mean, even Cora, who is just my jalapeno, no problem drinking alcohol and beer little kid, she has done that. So do we let them have the experience of them? Yes. We want them to kind of have kind of a negative experience with it. So there, again, there's not that draw. But we talk to them about the same exact things, the effects of lung cancer, tar and nicotine in the lungs and in the bloodstream. We talk to them about those same exact things, just like we do alcohol, but we don't hide it from them either. Luckily, it's worked up until this point. Nobody wants to touch it. Okay. That's all. I just wanted to throw that little piece in there.
Yeah, that's right. I feel just a little bit differently about tobacco than I do about alcohol, just because I don't think that alcohol has the same addictive comparison to nicotine. And what I've studied, because I do tobacco cessation classes and other stuff, and what I've studied about the prevalence of what it takes to develop a nicotine addiction, for me it's kind of scary, and so the decision we've made in our family is just to stay away from it, and that's something that doesn't ever have the chance to gain a foothold if we don't open the door in the first place. So once again, there's no judgment here. If that's something
didn't get hurt by that. No.
Yeah, that you're using tobacco and you've used it for years. You know the health effects. I've not met a chronic smoker yet who believes that it's healthy. And they understand that the chronic use of it has consequences. So, just going into it with eyes open. The point, like I said, that we hope that everyone takes away from this today is that the best way to get ahead of the curve on this is to be able to talk to your kids about it, to dialogue about it, to do it in a way that doesn't make them want to do it in an underhanded, sneaky way, where you don't have the ability to influence them in a positive way, to think critically and to be able to make the healthiest choice for them. Because I think that's honestly the goal that we have in all of our parenting, is to help our kids be able to grow healthy and strong and be able to make good decisions so that they can have long and healthy lives.
Yeah, like you and I always say, it's all about the relationship.
It is. All right. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. And once again, we want to encourage everybody, if you have something out there that you agree with and you want to give us kudos for, man, we'd love to hear that stuff. If there's something you'd like to say to us and you're like, man, I really take issue with you, Trey, or you, Jeff, and here's what I have to say about it. Or if you have a question you'd like to hear us answer or address on a future show, please, please, please follow all the links that Trey gave at the beginning of the show. We'd love to hear from you. And until then, we will look forward to seeing you next Friday.